and on the colleagues and friends of Hussein, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum to you all. Peace be upon you all. I send my condolences at this commemoration of the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, the grandson of the Prophet Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, Imam Hussein, who was martyred in these days in the month of Muharram. My dear brothers and sisters, it is very unfortunate to begin our new Islamic year and to begin our new year at the time where we are seeing a huge humanitarian catastrophe which has led to the killing of so many people, killing and the martyrdom and the injuries of so many people. The number of martyrs has now increased to over 300, and the number of injured has now increased to over 1,000 in the Gaza Strip. Gaza Strip, which is under siege, isolated, oppressed. At the same time, Gaza is resisting and is standing with perseverance. Today, we may not need to speak about the idea and the implementation and the example. We today are witnessing and are living in this current period, in these hours, in these very moments. We are now witnessing a repetition of what happened in Karbala. We are witnessing a repetition of the Karbala events. We are witnessing a scene of what happened and what occurred in Karbala. What is happening today, when we remember what went on in history, what happens today helps us to understand what happened in history. The truth of Karbala is that there is one group, a group of faithful, firm people who hold on to their dignity and to their honor and the rights of their ummah. This group refuses to deter and to stand down and refuses to take it lightly, to back down and give up to the oppressors. This group stands firm and resists and confronts. And when this group faces two choices, the choice of surrender, of humiliating surrender, and the choice of confronting, and a confrontation which is imbalanced and which could lead to martyrdom, which could very well lead to martyrdom, when it faces these two choices, this group makes a choice of resistance and confrontation and martyrdom. This faithful group, which is under siege and suffering from hunger and thirst, and which is being terrorized with threats and then is being killed, it still does not back down, and the martyrs are falling one after another. Isn't this what happened in Karbala? Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, set an example and laid the foundations for this Islamic humanitarian school of thought, this school which we've seen throughout history. He said his very, very known saying, which we repeat every day, especially on the 10th day of Muharram. He says, I was faced with two choices. We were faced with two choices between humiliation and confront the war in light of imbalance of power, or either humiliation, giving up, and humiliating surrender. And Imam Hussein chose and said, we are not people who will be humiliated. God does not want us to be humiliated, and the Prophet and the faithful also did not want this to happen to us. And that it was also said, we had two choices, as I said before, between humiliation and confronting, and we will not be humiliated. God does not want this for us. Why does he say we will not be humiliated? Is it a subject of feelings or enthusiasm, or is it a humanitarian issue, a ideological and godly and humanitarian commitment, which is based upon humanitarian foundations and human dignity and human rights? Imam Hussein, peace be upon him, says, we will not be humiliated. Why? God does not want us to be humiliated, and his prophet and the faithful and many, many other souls and thousands of people, thousands are against humiliation and staying away and backing down, giving up our dignity. This is the school of thought of Imam Hussein and the Prophet Muhammad in Karbala. And when a human is martyred, when anyone is martyred for the sake of his honor against those oppressors, those who want to humiliate, those who have backed down, who have given up their rights and their dignity, this is part of his humanitarian cause. This is part of his religion. This is part of Islam. This was the choice which was made in Karbala. And this was also the choice which was made in the July 2006 war. When you, in Lebanon, when you were faced with two choices, and the Lebanese resistance and the people, the supporters of the resistance, and all those people who supported the resistance and who took the resistance in, all those people were put in front of two choices, either humiliating surrender and accepting the American dictations and Israeli dictations to stop the war, and another choice which was confronting and war and destruction and massacres and killings, and you refused to live in humiliation. And you decided to fight and confront, and this led to martyrdom. And via this martyrdom, you brought about a historic victory in Lebanon. In this Karbala Husseini logic, you refused humiliation and you refused to take these dictations, and you insisted to continue resistance and confrontation. Although we saw all of this destruction, tens of thousands of the houses were destroyed and thousands were killed, thousands of martyrs and thousands were injured, men, women and children. And there was no one to help us, no one, very little people, very small groups, a small number of groups were the only ones who stood with us. At the end, blood was victorious against the sword. And what's happening today in Gaza is very similar. I'm not saying it's actually not just similar, it's the same. It's a carbon copy of what happened in the July 2006 war, a Palestinian carbon copy. We in Lebanon, we can understand very well what's going on in Gaza if we paid attention to this issue, to the similarities. What is going on in detail is exactly what happened in Lebanon, and the choices which are to be made are the same choices. The battle is the same battle, and the result, hopefully, inshallah, will be the same result. When we look at Gaza, which is isolated, suffering from thirst and hunger, which is isolated with terror and with bullets and fire, Gaza, which gave hundreds of martyrs yesterday, and we find the people of Gaza still standing with perseverance, standing firm, who don't show any weakness. And the head of the Palestinian legal prime minister, the fighter Ismail Haniyeh, comes out from the fire and says from under the fire, he says, if they destroy the whole of Gaza and they won't be able, but even if they do this, we will not back down and we will not give in, and we will hold on to our honor and we will hold on to our rights. This is Karbala. This is the true Karbala. When anyone refuses humiliation and is commemorating his martyrs and body parts are falling and confronting fire, when someone answers in this way, this is the real show of Karbala. Today, my dear brothers and sisters, allow me to speak about certain issues in this confrontation. And let me be very frank. In the July 2006 war, I was not speaking very frankly. And I understand very well the situation of our brothers in Gaza, which is very similar to our situation, with our situation how it was in July 2006 war. And I believe the situation of the Palestinians is even worse than ours was in 2006 war. And so they must have a specific approach. But allow me today to be very frank and name things as they are. Let it be this way. Today, we need the word of righteousness, a word of frankness. We need transparency so that the whole ummah can take its responsibilities in light of what is going on. My dear brothers and sisters, what is going on in Gaza right now, just like in Lebanon, is in a very clear way. Let me first of all describe what is happening very clearly. There is a permanent scheme or a permanent Israeli-American plan or project in the region. The plan or the project is to impose a humiliating settlement with Israeli and American conditions, impose a settlement on the rest of the Arabs. After Egypt and Jordan exited and held so-called or signed so-called peace agreements with Israel, the Palestinian people and Lebanon and Syria were left. The Americans and the Zionists want a settlement for the Arab-Israeli conflict, but not in any form. They want it in their own form with American-Israeli conditions. The Palestinians and the Lebanese, the Syrians, must give in to these conditions. This is the American-Israeli plan. And according to the Americans and the Zionists, there is no other choice but to give in to these conditions. And they are putting their efforts to impose these conditions by force. They use pressure, they use isolation, they use blockades, they use divisions, attempts to create internal divisions, to make internal groups go against each other. They use media warfare, media verbal attacks. They use assassinations. They also use wars. This is what they want. What they want is that those who have not backed down, who have not deterred until now, they must give in. That's what they want. They want to force us, they want to force those who haven't given in to give in to the Israeli-American conditions for this settlement. There are some Arab regimes who are partners in this project and are part of this project. Some speak about Arab silence or about Arabs commenting. This is not true. There is Arab partnership. I don't mean all the Arabs or all the Arab regimes, but I mean there is a true Arab partnership. Some Arab regimes are true partners in this project, and especially those regimes who signed peace treaties or so-called peace treaties with Israel. And these regimes are helping and are contributing on all levels, politically, psychologically, socially, in the media, culturally, from the security perspective, militarily. They are contributing to imposing the conditions of surrender on the rest of the resistance groups. They are contributing to forcing these groups to surrender to the American-Israeli conditions for an Arab-Israeli settlement. So let's be very clear. We are now witnessing an Arab partnership in this project. Some Arab countries are taking part in this project. The war which was waged on us in Lebanon in 2006 was waged with Arab agreement. And let me be very clear, sometimes even some Arabs requested this war to be waged, and the Israelis were very clear, and none of the Arabs can deny this, because maybe the Zionists have documents which prove this Arab involvement, have documents whereby the Arabs called the Israelis and told them, get rid of Hezbollah. And when the war began, after the Israeli failures in the beginning days, the Arabs called on Israel to continue the war against Hezbollah, to cut off Hezbollah's head, to topple Hezbollah. This is what is going on in Gaza as well. Those same regimes are calling on Israel to destroy Hamas and al-Jihad al-Islami, and also to topple, to destroy these resistance fighters, and to finally finish this battle. They are requesting and are helping and contributing in this war. This is the truth. We even heard today from some Israeli officials that the magnitude of the Arab support for the war on Gaza is more than the Arab support for the war which Israel waged against Lebanon in July 2006. And this is something very, very unfortunate. So this is the scene which we are witnessing now. This is the true picture. And I'd like to tell you, my dear brothers and sisters, even the internal divisions in Palestine, the internal fighting among Palestinians, the main reason behind this internal fighting amongst Palestinians is some of these Arab regimes which contributed and financed and armed so that the fighting would occur between the Palestinian factions. And just like they did here in Lebanon, the previous government, the previous Lebanese government, wouldn't have taken the two black decisions which it took on the 5th of May were it not for the support and the cover of some of these Arab regimes which wanted Lebanon to go into an internal war, a harsh internal war. But we were able to prevent this war from happening, and the opposition's performance was what prevented the war from occurring. Those Arab regimes are not objective or neutral or non-aligned. No, they are convinced with what they are doing, and they are pursuing these efforts based upon their commitment to a project, and this is something very unfortunate. Now, when we have internal fighting, internal divisions in Palestine or in Lebanon, the excuse for these Arab regimes is always to say the Palestinians are killing each other. What can we do? In order to rid themselves of any responsibility, they say, what can they do? What can we do towards Palestine, or what can we do towards Lebanon? And what is very unfortunate is that even on the political level, even on the media, and nobody, neither in the July 2006 war or even today in Gaza, nobody has called on the Arab regimes to open their borders, to wage war and help the Palestinians or the Lebanese. To help the Lebanese before or the Palestinians now. Nobody has called for the Arabs to take arms, but at least we wanted an appropriate political position. But what we find once again, just like we saw in the July 2006 war, once again they put responsibility on the victim. Yesterday we heard one of the Egyptian officials saying that those who take responsibility of what happened are those same people who disrupted the efforts of the Palestinian dialogue. He meant Hamas. And then this Egyptian official says that we warned, we made warnings, and whoever doesn't listen to these warnings must take responsibility of the consequences. Can any human being believe that such words are said by an Arab official? And he is the same official who said during the siege on Gaza, when Gaza was under the blockade and suffering from disease and hunger, he said that those who will enter Egypt, we will break their legs. He was speaking about the Palestinians who will enter Egypt. My dear brothers and sisters, allow me to speak now to point out to history. When we listen to such talk from officials and from certain people in the Arab world, I understand part of what Imam al-Hussein said, peace be upon him, at that time in history, when Imam Hussein said, I find that death is happiness and living with oppressors is something very, very bad. And I cannot, life is not good, it's not worth living with people who practice conspiracy against the Ummah in this way. 300 martyrs in Palestine who were shed in a bloodbath, and at the same time an Arab official stands and puts responsibility on the victim and on the martyrs. As if Hamas and Jihad al-Islami and the Islamist Jihad and the Palestinian factions in Gaza must have agreed to to extending the ceasefire, to extend the blockade and to extend the humiliation which has been continuing for 6 months. Today, we hear the same words which we heard during the July 2006 war. And this is an attempt to put responsibility on the resistance in Gaza. They're trying to put responsibility on the resistance of Gaza for this war. This is something which is shameful, even on the media level. Some of the Arab satellite channels, which we can call actually Hebrew channels, not Arab channels. I was watching one of these channels yesterday and today, as if those who were killed yesterday in Gaza were killed in some traffic accident in India. And then they show the news event and go back to normal programming, as if there is no Arab humanitarian catastrophe happening in Gaza. Of course, because these satellite channels, what will they say to their viewers, these same channels who insist to describe those who are being martyred in Gaza, they insist on calling them as people being killed and not martyred. Today, my dear brothers and sisters, this is the clear scene, this is the scenario. The people of Gaza have made their choice, the choice of blood, and they are implementing this choice. They are resisting, they are being martyred, they are standing with perseverance, just like you did in the July 2006 war. And they will not be prevented, just like you. The magnitude of the sacrifice, the magnitude of the bloodshed, the magnitude of no one helping and assisting, none of this will prevent them from continuing with their resistance, from continuing to stand firm. But what is the responsibility of the Ummah today? We as an Ummah, as a nation, we are up against a central goal in the current conflict which is going on. The central goal must be to work to stop the Zionist campaign, the Zionist assault against Gaza, and we must work in order for this assault not to achieve its aims. In this way, we will be able to achieve victory in Gaza, although there will be sacrifices of a huge magnitude. This is the aim which the whole Ummah must make all its efforts to achieve. It's not only the responsibility of the people of Gaza, it's the responsibility of the Ummah, the responsibility of the governments in the Arab and Islamic world, and it's the responsibility of the peoples. The governments which did not say anything, which stayed silent, the people of these governments must impose on their governments to take steps. And there is no justification at all for the people to say that we have regimes of oppression. This is not a justification to make this excuse. We must go to the streets in the Arab and Islamic world and raise our voices in this world and put pressure on our governments, even if the fire was opened on our chest. This is something which is our duty, and whoever falls in this duty is a martyr on the road to Al-Quds. He is a martyr of Islam. He is a martyr of the messengers, a martyr of humanity. But It is not acceptable for the rulers to apologize of being incapable, or the people to say that they are oppressed by their rulers. In the July 2006 war, I didn't request this from the Arab people, but in the war on Gaza and in the assault on Gaza, I am saying this is our duty. This is our duty, all of us. We must head to the streets. Thousands, in tens of thousands, in hundreds of thousands, to call on these governments and to put responsibility on these governments. And these governments know what they can do. They can do a lot. And in this period where the United States of America is suffering and the Europeans are suffering from financial and economic crisis, yes, in this period, we in the Arab world, we have oil, we have money, we have a political stance, our governments and our regimes, very simply and with very little effort, can stop the assault on our people in Gaza. This is the first point. The second point, all of these Arab and Islamic peoples must head to the streets and call on the Egyptian government specifically. And let me here be very clear and specific. Today, the Egyptian position is the cornerstone in what's going on in Gaza. And nobody is calling on Egypt to open fire, to take arms, and to head to war. We only want Egypt to open the border crossing so that food and medicine and water and even arms can reach our people in Gaza. And in Gaza, we have people and resistance fighters and men and women who are qualified for resistance and achieving victory. And previously, they performed in an excellent way. We in Lebanon, in the July 2006 war, we did not call on any Arab country to take arms. We call on them to open the borders, yes. When we were admitting to Syria, we admitted to Syria, we thanked Syria for helping us in our victory in the July 2006 war, because Syria did not close its borders, although the border crossings were bombed by Israelis. The border between Syria and Lebanon stayed open. And what we're calling for, what we're requesting from Egypt, is to open the Rafah border crossing permanently for those who are alive, not just for the injured or for the martyrs. Egypt is not the Red Crescent. Egypt was used to be called the mother of the world, and Egypt is the biggest and most important Arab country. It's not a Red Cross or a Red Crescent organization just to take in the injured or the martyrs. The Egyptian leadership, the Egyptian regime, must make a final decision on this issue. And the Egyptian regime, from the political perspective, must not use this war to put pressure on Hamas and on the resistance Palestinian factions in Gaza to agree to the Israeli conditions for a ceasefire, just like some used to do with us in the first days of the July 2006 war against Lebanon. The Egyptian regime must politically help the people of Gaza so that the assault can be stopped without any preconditions. This is the Egyptian responsibility. This is the true Egyptian responsibility. And here, our people in the Arab and Islamic world must call on the Egyptian regime, must request from the Egyptian regime. Until now, we were speaking in a polite manner. But now, after what happened yesterday, I'd tell the Egyptian regime, you Egyptian officials, if you don't open the Rafah border crossing, if you don't help your brothers in Gaza, then you are partners in the crime, you are partners in the killings, and you are partners in the siege, and you are partners in bringing about this Palestinian suffering. This speech must be heard by the Egyptian officials and must be heard also We in the Arab and Islamic world must speak to Egypt in this way. Religious figures, parties, cultural figures, media, all of the society must speak to Egypt in this way. And the Egyptians must know that they will be condemned by the Ummah and by history and by the prophets and by the martyrs if they do not immediately take a humanitarian and historic position. And here comes the most important issue. Here I'd like to speak to the Egyptian people, the Muslim people, the Arab people in Egypt, the honorable Egyptian resistance people. These people who we all know, who we're all familiar with. We know the hearts of the Egyptian people and we know how the Egyptians think. Let these Egyptian people, let them go to the streets in millions. Can the Egyptian police kill millions of Egyptian people? No, of course not. We all call on the Egyptian people because the Egyptian people are on the territories of the Egyptian regime which closed the Rafah border crossing. The Egyptian people, you must open the Rafah border crossing. And I'm not here practicing any political games against anyone. I am here speaking as a resistance figure, as a resistance group which fought for 33 days. I'm speaking as a person who was with the people who fought and gave martyrs, sacrificed with martyrs. What we hear and what we know and what we hear about the soldiers and the generals of the Egyptian armed forces is that they are still attached to their Arab origin and they are still against the Zionists, although tens of years have passed after Camp David. This is what we know about the Egyptian armed forces. I'm not calling for a revolution in Egypt, and I'm not in a position to call for a revolution in Egypt. But when generals come and tell the political leaders, we cannot put up with this, and we are, of course, because of our stars, because of being generals, we cannot be generals and at the same time be guards for Israel. Today, Egypt, the people of Egypt, the people of Al-Azhar, the religious figures, the Egyptian armed forces, the Egyptian politicians, I don't think there's any excuse for anyone. This is what will change the equation. Today, what changes the equation is to change the Egyptian political position. This is what the Arab political leaders and the Arab people and the Egyptian people must call on from the Egyptian regime, from the Egyptian political leadership. If this border crossing is open and if water and food and medicine and arms and money reaches our people in Gaza, we will see a repetition of the victory which happened in Lebanon. And we are sure of this. We are confident of this. Although we are confident of this victory, the people in Gaza are living hard conditions, but we are still confident of this victory. And if Gaza stays on its own two feet, if Gaza stays and shows perseverance for days or weeks, the assault will end. This enemy cannot stand a long war, an exhausting war. This enemy will be obliged in the end to stop its assault, and then its goals will be cancelled, and then as well all those who wanted to gain leadership via shedding the blood of the Palestinians will also witness their failure. Those here I'm referring to the Israeli politicians. Yes, some in Lebanon might say now that the solution is to go to just and comprehensive peace. This is the solution which will end the suffering. Okay, now let's put aside our position concerning a just and comprehensive peace. You who call for a just and comprehensive peace ever since Madrid and after the Madrid Agreement, What did you gain until now from Israel? What did Israel give you? What did it give you except massacres, bloodbaths, assaults, and more humiliation, and imposing dictations and conditions? In the Palestinian settlement, the Palestinian Authority went very far, and the negotiations in Camp David took place, not with Likud or Kadima, but with the Labour Party, with Barak, when Barak was the Prime Minister of the Zionist entity. He held negotiations at a time with the late Yasser Arafat, but at Camp David, the Palestinians did not even get the least extent of their rights, which saves them face. What just and comprehensive peace are they speaking about? Comprehensive peace based upon humiliating Israeli conditions? No Al-Quds, no right to return, no Palestinian territories to establish a Palestinian state. How stupid is this idea? At the time where Palestinians are being killed in Gaza, and after we were killed in Lebanon, some speak about just and comprehensive peace. You convinced the Israelis about this before, and you convinced the Palestinian factions to drop their arms. What did you get from this in Lebanon and in Palestine and in all places? Did Israel give you back your legitimate rights? Did they give you back the least extent of your legitimate rights? No, not at all. Some say, come and the international community will protect us. Where is the international community to protect those in Gaza, to protect the women and children of Gaza? Some say international decisions protect us. Where are these international decisions in the Arab-Israeli conflict? Until now, not even one international resolution has been implemented, even the resolution 421. Some say Arab unity will protect us. What Arab unity? The Arab rulers need days to agree to holding a meeting. They haven't agreed to holding this meeting until now because of certain reservations from here and there. My dear brothers and sisters, what happened and what is happening today in Gaza and what happened in the July 2006 war against Lebanon must be enough. Must be enough to stop and to show to people that what protects our people and what gives us back our rights is resistance. Resistance and jihad and perseverance. Resistance with perseverance. Bloody resistance. All other choices other than that are imagination and will not lead to anything. Do we need, we Arabs, we in the Arab and Islamic world, do we need, in order to reach this stage, do we need 100 Qana massacres? Do we need 100 Gaza massacres to be convinced? Do we need 100 Deir Yassin massacres? Do we need 100 massacres in the Prophet Ibrahim Mosque? This is so unfortunate. This enemy whom you want to achieve peace with, every year or every 2 years, gives you a new evidence of its brutality, its racism, its criminality, and its belief in the blood of innocent people, in shedding the blood of innocent people. This is how the enemy thinks. Your negotiations for peace will only lead to more killings. Do we need more massacres for our rulers and our peoples and our intellectuals to be convinced that we are up against an enemy who, in his nature, is a criminal and a terrorist and a racist, someone or an enemy who cannot have, who we cannot have any peace with? Do we need more blood to be shed to be convinced with this idea? But anyway, in light of all this clarity, after all what I said, after this frank speech, And after all these requests, after all these calls we made from the rulers and the people, we are confident, we know the people of Gaza, we know the resistance fighters in Gaza. And here I'm calling them in your name, in the name of the resistance fighters in Lebanon, in the name of the families of the martyrs and the injured in Lebanon, in the name of all the jihadi fighters in Lebanon. I congratulate the people of Gaza. I send my condolences for their martyrs. And I call on the injured to stand on their feet once again. I pray for the injured to stand on their feet once again. We are people who depend on Allah and we believe in godly victories. Even if some say that this is part of imagination, we know that the people of Gaza are qualified to stand on the battle, on the field of battle. We are the people of resistance, and the people of Gaza are the people of resistance. This is what brings about victory: faith and honesty and standing firm. This is what creates victory, and Allah will make you victorious. And the whole Ummah is responsible to stand side by side with you, and nobody has the right. It's not acceptable for anyone to stand aside and not put all his efforts to help you. In Lebanon, I'd like to say a few words concerning Lebanon's role in this situation, the situation of the war on Gaza. Ever since the beginning of the Zionist bloody assault on Gaza, Olmert and Barak and Livni and some Israeli officials have made some threats and some stern warnings against any other front of war. And what they meant was Lebanon. And they took steps and made procedures on the borders. There is now, as you do know, certain measures are being taken on the borders between occupied Palestine and Lebanon. And they called on the inhabitants of the settlements in northern occupied Palestine to get themselves ready for a certain battle. There are two chances. There are two situations, and here I must speak with national responsibility, and I do not want to scare anyone or make anyone feel anxious or worried, but we cannot be tricked as well. There are two choices. We have, of course, the scenario as the following: all what the Israelis are doing in northern occupied Palestine are precautionary measures in case something happens from Lebanon, in case Lebanon takes some steps against the Israelis. But there is another scenario, another possible scenario, and we cannot turn a blind eye to this scenario, which is at this very bad timing, at the time where some Arab regimes are collaborating, at the time where we have weak Arab positions, at the time where there is in international emptiness, international transitional period. As you do know, we're in a transitional period in America. Obama will take office or Bush will leave. At this bad time, another scenario exists, which is that the enemy may resort to taking some steps against Lebanon, might resort to a military assault against Lebanon, to take the chance now. And they need this, whether it be for the sake of the Israeli elections or to try and better the reputation of the Israeli army. And we must not sleep easily and say that Israel does not wage two wars at the same time. Previously, it waged three and four wars at the same time. So the Lebanese government and the Lebanese army and the Lebanese people and also the Lebanese resistance must be vigilant and must take precautionary measures and must not take what's happening around us lightly. Even the issue of the 8 rockets which were discovered a few days ago in southern Lebanon before the attack on Gaza. And I'd like to raise a question. Who put these rockets before the war began? And when these rockets were discovered in southern Lebanon, some in Lebanon, unfortunately, look, some politicians in Lebanon, when the two Lebanese were kidnapped by Israelis in southern Lebanon recently, some Lebanese politicians were silent. And these Lebanese politicians didn't show any reservations, didn't show any concern for these two Lebanese civilians who were kidnapped. But these same politicians, when these rockets were discovered, when these Katyusha rockets were discovered in Naqoura in southern Lebanon, they started to speak and raise theories, and then they started to point the fingers of accusation towards us. Even one of these Lebanese politicians said, nobody can take any steps in southern Lebanon. Nobody can do anything in Lebanon except Hezbollah. If this is their political analysis, this is a catastrophe. This is wrong. And, but although they accused us in this way, and some even accused Hezbollah of putting these rockets, I'd like to answer these same Lebanese politicians. I'd like to tell them, we in Hezbollah, we have courage and we take responsibility for anything, any act we do, and we do not hide behind our fingers. We have courage and we announce what we do. And we are not in the position of being under accusation to defend ourselves. But what happened, yes, is suspicious from another angle. Can't Israel to come into Lebanon and put and plant these rockets? Can't the spies of Lebanon, who are high in number in Lebanon, there are spy networks in Lebanon, as you know, can't they plant these rockets not to show unity with the people of Gaza, but to give justification to Israel to wage a military assault against Lebanon? And even these same Lebanese politicians who I referred to contributed to giving this justification. They said that putting these Katyusha rockets gives an excuse for Israel to wage a war. Let's assume this happens. Is this enough for Israel to assault Lebanon militarily? Is this enough for Israel to destroy Lebanon? You are the ones, you, these Lebanese politicians, are giving these excuses for Israel to invade Lebanon via making this. I am not now in the context of going deeply into this issue, but I now am in the context of calling on Lebanon and the region, but specifically Lebanon. I call on Lebanon, which defeated Israel two times and time and again. But the most famous defeats were in the year 2000 and in the year 2006. We in Lebanon must be cautious. And I don't want to hide anything from you. I called on the resistance fighters in southern Lebanon to be deployed and to be cautious, because we are facing a cruel enemy, a murderous enemy, and we don't know the magnitude of the plans which are being drawn in the region and in the world. And we do not fear what happened in the July 2006 war, and we do not fear what is happening now in Gaza. We believe in our choices, and we are ready to face, we are ready, I repeat, to face any military assault on our territory, any assault on our dignity. And our slogan was written with our blood, and we will face all those who assault us, whomever they may be. We face them via our resistance, via our presence, and via our belonging to the school of thought of Imam Hussein, which is, we will not be humiliated. My dear brothers and sisters, we all in Lebanon, in the Arab and Islamic world, we in these historic days And especially in these days of Ashura, we must take our responsibility, our historic and religious responsibility towards what's going on in Gaza. What is going on in Gaza, its results won't be only on Gaza or won't only be on Palestine, but will be on the whole Ummah. We must continue to take steps, and it's not enough to make a protest here or to make a strike there. We must put all our efforts into defending our people in Gaza. And tomorrow, which was announced by Imam Sayyid Ali al-Khamenei as a day of mourning for all of the mujahideen and the resistance fighters, tomorrow also will be a day of mourning from us. And tomorrow we will express our support and our unity with our people in Gaza. And tomorrow will be a day of mourning in support of our martyrs in Lebanon, of our martyrs in Gaza. And I call on you tomorrow in the afternoon to stage a protest in the Raya sports ground, to take part in this morning and to take part in commemorating the memory of these martyrs in Gaza. Once again, I call on you to take part in a protest in southern Beirut tomorrow afternoon. And I know that tomorrow evening, many Ashura ceremonies will be held. I call on cancelling all of these ceremonies, and I call on everyone to take part in this protest tomorrow. Men, women, children, I call on them to take part in this sitting. We must meet tomorrow and to show our support with Gaza and the people of Gaza. We must make our voices heard tomorrow. Tomorrow the world must hear our voices, and the world must witness our Husseini fists, and we must announce to the world that we are here, we are present, and nobody can, of course, impose fear on us. No fear can prevent us from taking these steps. I would have called on such steps being taken on the 10th day, but tomorrow will be the 10th day. Every day is Ashura, all territories are Karbala, and tomorrow will be the day of answering to the calls of Hussein. And tomorrow it is your duty, inshallah. Sayyidi Aba Abdullah Hussein, this is your blood, this is your voice, this is your word. We're hearing chants now of death to Israel by those who are present by the crowds, a slogan of Al-Mot li Israel, which is death to Israel. Aba Abdullah, the son of the Prophet, this is your blood, this is your voice, these are your body parts, this is your word, your words which we remember throughout history. You, once again, your blood is victorious against the sword, your blood is saving the Ummah, your blood draws the road and teaches us to live the life of honorable, dignified people. Assalamu alaykum, Mawlai Abu Abdullah al-Hussein, peace be upon you, peace be upon you, son of the Prophet, peace be upon all those martyrs who shed their blood for your sake. I pray for peace to be upon your soul, and I hope that I will continue to commemorate your memory. Peace be upon Hussein, peace be upon Ali, son of Hussein, peace be upon the children of Hussein, peace be upon the friends of Hussein, Peace be upon all of the martyrs who are marching on the road of Imam Hussein, and peace be upon you all. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Well, there you have it. That was a speech by Hassan Nasrallah, the head of the Hezbollah movement in Lebanon. Just to